Welcome to Intelligent Medicine, America's foremost program on health, medicine, and nutrition, featuring the latest on both conventional and alternative therapies. Now, here's Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The ground rules, I share vital health information with you. You get to call me. Our number is 888-302-3684. We've got affiliates all across America and listeners all across the world via podcasts. And we invite your questions, your comments. 888-302-3684. And among the stories we're going to touch upon today, proof positive. Finally, science has advanced to the point where we can incontrovertibly demonstrate that blondes are not necessarily dumb. We'll share the evidence with you in just a few moments. 888-302-3684. Also, if you sleep with a nightlight on, you may be courting the risk of obesity, according to a new study. Much more in store for you. We'll touch on some new controversy about vitamin E, the right type of vitamin E to take. We'll cover that story this hour or next. And we'll share some responses from esteemed physicians about new studies that suggest that vitamins just aren't worthwhile, that you needn't take your supplements, and that enough is enough. Time for the debate to end. Supplements are basically a waste of time. Well, we know better. We'll share some important perspectives on that story with you in just a few moments. All right. Are you cynical? Are you someone who sees stuff and you kind of gnash your teeth and say, it's a harsh, cruel world, and you just kind of go through life grousing because of the attitude of cynicism? Well, according to the journal Neurology, cynical distrust, which is defined as the belief that others are mainly motivated by selfish concerns, has been associated with other health problems such as heart disease. And now, in a new study, it is associated with a higher risk of dementia. Okay, so what do they do for the study? How do they determine whether someone is cynical? Well, nearly 1,500 people, average age 71, were given tests for dementia. And then they were given a questionnaire to measure their level of cynicism. And how do you measure a person's level of cynicism? Well, you ask questions like, do you agree with this statement? I think most people would lie to get ahead. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, people are just out for themselves. How about this one? It is safer to trust nobody. All right. Most people will use somewhat unfair reasons to gain profit or an advantage rather than lose it. And based on their scores, participants were grouped in low, moderate, or high levels on the cynical distrust scale. And here's what they found. Well, first of all, you got to kind of separate things out, because it may be that people who are cynical, they tend to eat poorer diets, or they don't exercise, or they smoke cigarettes. So they try to control for that in the study. They just want to look at the pure relationship between cynical attitudes and the risk of dementia in these individuals, average age 71. So here's what they found. Of the 164 people with high levels of cynicism, 14 developed dementia, compared to just 9 of the 212 people with low levels of cynicism. So you could say, you just might say, that cynicism has an erosive effect on the brain. In this self-same study, high cynicism did appear to be associated with earlier risk of death, but then they accounted for factors such as socioeconomic factors, status, behaviors such as smoking and exercise, overall diet, and then there was no longer any link between cynicism and early death. So what do you think of this study? I think that this study is a piece of junk. I mean, come on. What are they talking about? These researchers, they always have an ulterior motive. They're probably on the take from some group that tries to promote happiness. That's disgusting. So take it with a grain of salt if you want, but cynicism is not an emotion that you can easily indulge in and escape with a full deck in terms of brain capacity. The high, you know, high levels of stress hormones can have an erosive effect on your brain. All right, we're going to take some phone calls. We've got somebody on the line already. We've got Roz. Welcome, Roz. How you doing?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was wondering about GERD. I have a lot of heartburn that it burns into my mouth. I feel like my mouth is getting it up my chest. What do I do about it?
Okay, well, what have you done about it so far? I mean, have you been to the doctor? Have you started taking medications or supplements, changed your diet? What's
going on? I'm trying to change my diet. I'm cutting out the chocolate and stuff like that, and I've taken a couple of DGLs.
Okay. All right, so here's the deal. So when we see someone who has GERD, which, by the way, extremely common condition in America. I mean, this is bankrolling the pharmaceutical industry because we have a whole raft of medications that are supposedly there for, originally developed for ulcers. Now they're used for GERD, which is kind of upstream of where ulcers occur. Ulcers occur in the stomach. GERD occurs in the esophagus, and it may be due to a variety of factors. So, you know, one person's GERD may be caused by different factors than another person's GERD. But let's start with one simple statistic. What is your height and weight, if you don't mind sharing, Roz?
About 135, and I'm 5'3 and a half.
Okay, so you may be carrying excess weight around the midsection, which tends to put pressure on your the junction between your stomach and your esophagus. It's actually a little passageway in your diaphragm, which is the breathing muscle. And this is sometimes referred to as a hiatal hernia.
I do have that.
Okay, well, you know, when they check, most people end up having that. That's, you know, that's almost routine. It's, oh, you have a hiatal hernia. Okay, well, it's not. If you have a hiatal hernia, it's not inevitable that you're going to have GERD. But if you, I mean, clearly if you have pressure around the midsection due to excess abdominal weight, that's going to make a difference. So that's number one. Number two, you said you played around with DGL. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I've taken it like a couple of times, like before dinner or...
Right. Now, this is so the way you use DGL, which is deglycerinated licorice. By the way, you deglycerinate licorice because licorice can raise your blood pressure and lower your potassium if you take pure, just regular licorice herb. So you want the DGL kind that's soothing and has an anti-inflammatory effect. And you got to really slam that stuff. You got to take like 8, 10, 12 a day. You suck on it like, you know, some people suck on hard candies during the day, although generally it's made in such a way that you're not going to get a lot of sugar calories from the DGL. The DGL, licorice itself is sweet, and so you don't need a lot to sweeten it and make it palatable. It tastes pretty good. So you suck on it between meals. You wait a while so you don't wash it away. That's number one. No, you know, going back to diet, we have to look at whether there are other food precipitants. I mean, clearly, smart people avoid the things that are classically going to cause GERD, you know, like bitter coffee or fried foods or, you know, tomato sauce, orange juice. So these are things that tend to have an acidic effect, and so you may want to avoid those things, the classic things, you know, lots and lots of booze. That could be a problem. You know, you're throwing back, you know, tequila. It has a corrosive effect on the esophagus. Okay, so you avoid those and you still have GERD. Well, many patients have individual food sensitivities. They might be sensitive to one food or another, like dairy products or wheat. We can test for that, or you can try an elimination diet. Also, many patients have a fermentive process going on in the stomach. So bubble, bubble, toil and trouble, and then things kind of regurgitate and reflux. They float up on the bubble raft coming up to the back of your throat. So eating a diet that's lower in carbohydrates altogether, not just lower in sugars and simple carbohydrates, but also lower in starches, which have a fermentive effect, that can be helpful. Taking probiotics can normalize the balance in your intestinal tract. But my favorite product par excellence for GERD is something called Endofin. And I really like it. It's a product that is not sold in health food stores generally. It's sold mostly through nutritionally oriented physicians. Endofin is a product that it's a powder that you mix in water, and it supports the integrity of the stomach and esophageal lining, and it helps to augment the strength of the protective mucus layer on the surface of your tissue that's inflamed. And it's a prebiotic, so it helps to promote beneficial bacterial growth. And it also seems to normalize the balance in the tissue that may be inflamed or painful. I mean, it's made with plantain. It's made with green tea extract. It's got some EGCG in it. It also has larch gum, arabinogalactin. So we find this a very, very successful product. It's called Endefen, E-N-D-E-F-E-N. And we sell it via the Hoffman Center. Go to drhoffman.com, click on the store, look up Endefen, E-N-D-E-F-E-N. And if you take that two or three times in between meals, also with the DGL and the right kind of diet, often you're able to defeat your GERD and you won't require medication. But if it persists, you got to get checked. You got to get that upper GI endoscopy to make sure that nothing serious is going on.
All right, there
you go. I mean, good question, because so many people suffer from it. I thank you for posing the question about GERD. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and when we return, good idea, bad idea, sleep with a nightlight, afraid of the dark, find out. This is Intelligent Medicine.
Why do I use Clear Sinus Care? Because I like to breathe.
Because I hate having a dry nose.
There are a lot of reasons to use Clear Sinus Care, the nasal rinse and sinus spray with xylitol. But the best reason is because it works.
I use Clear because my doctor told me to.
Because it's all natural.
Clear, spelled X-L-E-A-R, moisturizes and soothes those dry and irritated sinuses. Clear Sinus Care not only helps with dry air problems, it also helps wash away pollens, pollutants, and other airborne contaminants, making your sinus passageways all clear.
Because my snoring was keeping my wife awake.
Because now I'm not all stuffed up.
And because it's all natural, Clear is 100% safe for children. The perfect way to keep your whole family healthy and breathing right. Prevent the misery and stop the suffering with Clear. That's X-L-E-A-R at clear.com and fine retailers.
Available at Whole Foods, Vitamin Shoppe, and other fine natural products retailers.
For more intelligent medicine, download our free podcast at drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. We invite you to call 888-302-3684. We always get more calls in the second hour when our affiliate in New York, the new 710 WOR, joins us at 1 p.m. Nonetheless, we got lots to talk about, so let's start. The relationship between obesity and exposure to light at night. You know, remember when I was a kid, I was scared of the dark, and my parents got me this nightlight. But it was kind of a cool nightlight. It was like this sort of tall antique tower that had a little choo-choo train on top, and inside the choo-choo train was a light bulb. And they would turn on the light bulb, and, you know, kiss me tonight, turn on the light bulb, and I'd have like a little, like, dull light there so that the demons and boogeymen would not creep up on me while I slept. But according to a new study, that may not be a good idea. Plus, think of all the people who are shift workers who get home really late at night, and then, you know, they may sleep late. Or alternatively, they have to go to bed early because they have to get up super early. Some people, like my personal trainer, he opens up the gym at 5:30 in the morning, and he has like a two-hour commute when the subways aren't running. So he has to get up at like 2:30 in the morning. He goes to sleep at 8. You can never call him before 8 o'clock. So what happens when you sleep and there's light, ambient light in the room? Just in the room. According to a big study, disruption of sleep and circadian rhythms by exposure to light at night. By the way, the light, not necessarily sunlight. It could be just ambient light from a light bulb or from a computer. That exposure to light at night might be one mechanism contributing to the rise in obesity. And indeed, you know, there are studies that suggest that night workers, people who work on a night shift, they're exposed to fluorescent artificial light at night, they are generally fatter, more predisposed to diabetes. Well, here's what they found. The odds of obesity measured using body mass index, waist-hip ratio, waist-to-height ratio, waist circumference, increased with increasing levels of light at night exposure, even after adjustment for exercise, diet, alcohol intake, smoking. Didn't seem to make a difference. So, you know, while it's a correlation, not necessarily a causation, you know, getting the blackout shades isn't necessarily going to make the pounds melt off. But think about light pollution as a potential factor in your challenging obesity problem. All right, you know, this whole cliche of dumb blondes, right? It's almost like if you're blonde, somehow in the popular imagination, the gene that makes you blonde also deprives you of brain power somehow. And so, I mean, look, that's a cultural thing. And there's so many dumb blonde jokes, too many to enumerate. So what's the real deal? Is there a genetic relationship between blondness and lack of optimal mental capacity? Well, proof positive that there is no correlation, because unlike some problems or some issues where there's a multiplicity of genes, for example, obesity, there are myriad genes involved in obesity. At least a couple of dozen so far have been characterized. So one person who's obese might have this or that or the other combination of genes. Another person might have another. That's one of the reasons why it's so hard to come up with strategies to address obesity. Well, when it comes to hair, it is just one gene. Research has found that the blonde hair commonly seen in Northern Europeans is caused by a single change in the DNA of your chromosome that regulates the expression of a gene that encodes for blonde hair. And that's it. It's like one hit. And it has absolutely nothing to do with surrounding genes that may have something to do with mental functioning. However, let's look at another aspect of the dumb equation, which is culture. And it just may be that through legend and folklore, pop culture, that the association has been indelibly made, and that subtle forces are exerted on blonde girls or on their perceivers, mostly the males who are in charge, to impute to them a less than optimal mental deck. So that, you know, this is cultural. And you know, look, I wish I had a buck for every genius young engineering software graduate blonde gal who is at MIT. You know, here's one that blows my mind. Because, you know, exercise is beneficial. We know that exercise has an impact on weight and a lot of health characteristics. But did you know that exercise can boost your diversity of gut bacteria? So a lot of people, how do I change my gut bacteria? Well, change your diet, take a probiotic. It turns out that those who exercise have a healthier, more diverse ecosystem in their intestinal tracts, as if it were the signals from the muscles or from the nerves have an impact on the bacteria that grow intestinally. So yet another rationale for boosting your exercise program, and perhaps specifically in regard to digestive disorders. If you have GERD, if you have reflux, if you have inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel, exercise may have an impact on the trillions of bacteria that live inside you. Fascinating stuff. 888-302-3684. That's our number for Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back with more.
At Nordic Naturals, we believe that omega oils are essential to an extraordinary life. By correcting the global omega-3 deficiency, each generation can have the opportunity to grow healthy and strong, so you can do more of what you love with those you love. What's essential to us is proven purity and leading freshness. All of our oils surpass strict international standards for purity and freshness. Our oxygen-free processing combined with natural flavoring ensures no fishy smell, taste, or aftertaste. 100% of our fish is wild-caught, sourced in line with the Norwegian Fisheries Management System, and processed with minimal environmental impact. At Nordic Naturals, what's essential to us is simple. It's what's essential to you. Like us on Facebook and share your what's essential story, or simply visit NordicNaturals.com for free samples. Nordic Naturals is available at finer health food stores nationwide. Nordic Naturals, committed to delivering the world's safest, most effective omega oils.
A regular dose of Intelligent Medicine injected directly into your inbox. Subscribe to Dr. Hoffman's free newsletter. Just go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and weekends are a time for health radio, and I sometimes listen and I marvel at the profusion of weight loss panaceas that are purveyed on this medium, on radio. And bottom line, there is no weight loss panacea. There are some things that may be healthy adjuncts to proper efforts to reduce calories and exercise. And there are some metabolic problems that prevent people from losing weight. Their thyroids must be checked. We have to check for levels of cortisol. Hormonal imbalances, especially in men, can cause them to be flabby and obese. And menopausal issues often cause women trouble. So the analysis is complex. And a calorie isn't just a calorie isn't just a calorie. That's the theory that's upheld by mainstream medicine. But different sources of calories act differently in the bodies of different people who are genetically programmed one way or another. So that's why some people lose weight fabulously on a very low-fat diet. Other people, big problem. They're stuck. Most people, my personal bias is that a low-carb diet helps a lot of people achieve their weight loss goals. But when it comes to magic weight loss ingredients, we haven't found the holy grail yet, but here's something that's intriguing, and I've been using it, and I'll pass along my experience. Headline, new evidence that chili pepper ingredient fights fat. Capsaicin, the stuff that gives chili peppers their kick, may cause weight loss and fight fat buildup by triggering certain beneficial protein changes in the body. This study is entitled Proteomic Analysis for Anti-Obesity Potential of Capsaicin on White Adipose Tissue in Rats Fed with a High-Fat Diet. So a couple of problems with this. One is that we've cured a myriad of diseases in mice and rats, and sometimes it doesn't translate to people. We are different, although some of the people that you or I know may be part rodent. But it turns out that, yeah, we're metabolically different. Number two, okay, the amounts of this spicy capsaicin that were used probably would cause massive intolerance in a person. I mean, you'd have to be the most dedicated person to take red-hot chili peppers morning till night. You'd be sweating. You'd be flushing. you know, people would say, what's wrong with you? Your face is all red. So I was intrigued recently when I was introduced to a product that is a capsinoid, which means that it's got the properties of capsaicin without the spiciness or the tendency to make you sweat or experience your hair standing on end. And that is, the product is called Capsiate, C-A-P-S-I-A-T-E. And it's not a product that is available in health food stores. It's a product that is available through nutritionally oriented physicians. That's the way they want to distribute it. They give it to physicians who are involved in bariatric medicine, which is medicine directed towards weight loss. And this is a product we've been using with some degree of success in many of our patients who are very challenged in terms of weight loss. Now, also, I'll mention some other things I like to use. I like to use EGCG at moderately high doses, 4 capsules per day, when there's no reason to tell a patient they can't take such high doses. But EGCG is thermogenic. It tends to be a fat burner. That's been demonstrated in many studies. It's probably the best characterized among all the weight loss products out there. Raspberry ketones and, you know, green coffee bean extract, they don't really float my boat because the research is kind of sketchy, frankly, although highly touted on major shows like Dr. Oz and so on. But the science behind Capsiate is strong. And in our patients who take Capsiate, we notice they lose weight. We also notice that it has a satiety effect, a pro-satiety effect. In other words, an anti-appetite effect. They feel more content with moderate, smaller meals. And the research also shows that it tends to prevent or reverse metabolic syndrome. It helps with insulin utilization when patients are insulin resistant. So Capsiate, check out drhoffman.com. It's one of our featured products. And we really think it can make a difference for patients who are desirous of weight loss. You could take it, under medical supervision. That's always best, but you could also try the product. Take it for a test drive and see if it works for you. All right. This is an interesting item. This pop culture often guides people's medical decisions. Angelina Jolie is already the poster girl for prophylactic mastectomy. She has the gene, which is predictive of higher risk of breast cancer, but also ovarian cancer. It's the BRCA gene, BRCA1 and or 2. You can take a blood test, and that test will tell you if you have this gene. And she also has family members who have had cancer. So she has now announced that she is poised to remove her ovaries as well. And so what's the deal with that? In an op-ed titled My Medical Choice, Angelina Jolie stepped out of the closet, so to speak, as an advocate for prophylactic mastectomy. And she was praised for her courage and forthrightness because she's a movie star. She makes money on her looks and her appearance, and she's got a great body. And yet she was undertaking this radical form of surgery, and she wants to embolden other women to do it. Well, a new article suggests that double mastectomy is often misused in breast cancer. Some 69% of women who underwent surgery to remove a healthy breast didn't have a major family or genetic risk, according to a new study of the American Medical Association, Journal of the American Medical Association. So it suggests that it's almost like a vogue and more prevalent among well-educated women who, you know, have access to information. The authors of the article say anxiety and fear certainly hamper optimal decision making. They suggest that double mastectomies may be performed too often. Now, Angelina Jolie is going to have her ovaries taken out. And she says, quote, my doctors estimated that I had an 87% risk of breast cancer and a 50% risk of ovarian cancer. Now, if you are faced with a 1 in 2 chance of developing ovarian cancer, which often is deadly, it is actually not an irrational choice to have your ovaries removed. But these statistics can be misleading. Because the true statistic is that your risk goes up 50%, but here are the actual statistics. For those who have a first-degree relative developing ovarian cancer, as is the case with Jolie, the risk estimates show increases to getting ovarian cancer by age 65 of slightly less than 5% and lifetime risk of 9%. That's pretty high, but it's not 50%. And is it a justification for having your ovaries taken out with all kinds of health consequences? And the answer is, look, it's an individual decision. But she is so popular, and she is such a role model for so many women, that let's hope we have an enlightened discussion about this and that there's not a rush to judgment. The Bible saying is, if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. Well, if thine breasts or thine ovaries offend thee, maybe just don't precipitously pluck them out, because the medical evidence is still controversial as to whether that radical procedure will end up saving your life. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. 888-302-3684 is our number. We invite your calls.
Why Kyolic? Well, all the numbers add up for your health. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is the number one best-selling odorless garlic supplement for heart health available on the market today. For over 40 years, Kyolic has been the leading garlic supplement in America. Kyolic is 50 times richer than raw garlic in active beneficial compounds. Kyolic is organically grown and aged for 20 months to enhance its nutritional value, creating beneficial compounds not found in fresh or powdered garlic, but only in aged garlic extract from our farms in California. For maximum purity. Over 750 scientific studies at major universities such as Brown, Cornell, and UCLA prove that Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is working to enhance your body's immune function, protect your cells from free radical damage, and reduce the widest range of cardiovascular risk factors. Kyolic Aged Garlic Extract is available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, GNC, and fine health food stores everywhere. Call today at 1-800-421-2998 for your free sample of Kyolic.
We all know that humans need probiotics, but your dog needs probiotics too. Some dogs have chronic digestive issues just like humans. Probiotics will aid digestion and help improve overall immune health. Hi, I'm Gail Pruitt, certified nutritionist and author of the Doggone Good Cookbook. I do nutritional research for both humans and canines, focusing primarily on digestive issues. So whether your dog has chronic digestive issues or just the occasional upset, I recommend that you give your dog a daily probiotic to balance your dog's gut flora. You know, eating right and taking the right supplements are so important for your good health and for your best friends. And the best probiotics I've found is Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. So make sure the nutrients you and your dog eat are providing the maximum benefits. And always share your Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics. Your dog will love you for it.
Discover the Dr. O'Hara difference. Dr. O'Hara's Probiotics are available at Vitamin Shoppe, Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other fine health food stores nationwide.
Subscribe to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, updated several times weekly. Go to drhoffman.com.
Back to Health Talk. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Actually, I call it Health Talk. That's I'm having a little bit of a flashback to the original name of this program, which was Health Talk. This program now celebrating its 25th anniversary. Intelligent Medicine, the new title of my weekly program and the podcasts that are associated with it. You can check out our podcasts at drhoffman.com. So, big controversy brewing on the subject of marijuana. Marijuana legalization is taking the country by storm. It's legal in Colorado, but there are initiatives across the nation to make this stuff more legal and also, hence, more acceptable and more available. And a few months ago, I wrote for our newsletter about some concerns I had about the health consequences of marijuana. Marijuana, contrary to what some people say, is not benign. There are some adverse health consequences associated with marijuana. On the other hand, there may be some specific health benefits associated with marijuana and its constituent compounds, which are mainly two: THC, tetrahydrocannabinol, and CBD, cannabidiol. And CBD is actually attracting attention because it's a legal derivative of hemp seed. And I predict you're going to see a big push in the supplement arena for CBD. It's not to get high. It's because of health benefits. And we're going to cover this story, I'm sure, in greater depth in 2014. So stay tuned. But here, a couple of new stories. Marijuana use may affect the size and shape of men's sperm. That's not good. Like stoned sperm. Your sperm just, they don't swim. They get kind of like intoxicated, and they don't swim very well. And this could affect fertility, or even could create a higher risk for certain types of birth defects. We don't even know. But on the other hand, you have advocates for marijuana use. Montel Williams is an advocate. He has multiple sclerosis. He's an advocate for marijuana use. He said it really helps him with pain, with weakness, with movement. And now there's some intriguing studies that show that marijuana may have potential in treating autoimmune disease, not just making you feel better, like, okay, you know, you're really sick, but you don't care because you're stoned. No, it actually may have an impact on the course of autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis. Recent findings show that THC, an active ingredient in marijuana, can modify molecules called histones, leading to suppression of inflammation. Therefore, marijuana could be efficacious in the treatment of autoimmune diseases such as arthritis, lupus, colitis, multiple sclerosis, and the like, where chronic inflammation play a role. But let's review. There's a big article. So this is such a big concern that there's a major review article in the New England Journal of Medicine this week. You can check it out at the New England Journal website. It's entitled Adverse Health Effects of Marijuana, and they enumerate them. Effect on brain development. When young kids and adolescents use it, it may have an impact on the connectivity of the brain, particularly if someone starts to use it in adolescence or young adulthood. A possible role as a gateway drug. Well, for some people, it's not. They smoke and they get over it. They become productive members of society. But for others, it leads them to adopt use of other drugs. For me, marijuana was not a gateway drug to the use of stronger drugs, But it was a gateway drug to smoking because I got used to the idea of inhaling burning plant material. And then I got hooked on cigarettes for a couple of years after I smoked marijuana in college. Relation to mental illness, relationship to school performance and achievement, the risk of motor vehicle accidents, the risk of cancer, because after all, you're inhaling the stuff, plant material, burning plant material deep in your lungs. And well, it's not the same as cigarettes. It's still, it's akin to that, respiratory diseases and so on. So there's a lot of gaps in our knowledge about the long-term effects of marijuana. There may be benefits and there may be problems associated with it. And we need more research. And this year, we'll be talking more about CBD, a legal derivative, cannabidiol, a legal derivative of hemp seed, hence produced legally in this country and available throughout America, regardless of the marijuana laws or legislation, and its unique health properties. It's an intriguing story. It's just unfolding. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.
Wellness is just a click away. Go to drhoffman.com.
Back to Intelligent Medicine. You know, end-of-life care, big dilemma in this country because it's estimated that we spend about half of our medical resources on the last 6 months of life for people with diseases that ultimately are going to dispatch them. And the dilemma is, do we pull the plug? Do we throw granny over the cliff? Or throw grandpa off the bus, as sometimes people colorfully illustrate. This is a big deal. And here's an article that suggests that doctors who know a lot about the state of medicine themselves would forego aggressive treatment for themselves at the end of life. So most physicians, according to this study, would choose a do not resuscitate or a no-code status. In other words, no-code means that if you were to, quote, die, if you had cardiac arrest in the hospital, that's one of the worst places to have cardiac arrest if you want to die peacefully because people just come running and they resuscitate you and they put lines in you. They end up in the intensive care unit, sometimes languishing for weeks before you die. So doctors know this, and when they themselves are terminally ill, I mean, let's face it, there is such a thing as terminal illness, an illness that you know is ultimately going to dispatch you. As much as we hope to find cures, some diseases are unremitting and ultimately will lead us to meet our maker. Doctors do not choose very radical interventions for themselves. The question was posed by the director of the Stanford Palliative Care Education and Training Program. He says, why do we physicians choose to pursue such aggressive treatment for our patients when we wouldn't choose it for ourselves? And what they've also found is that end-of-life care for the elderly is often too aggressive, according to a study. More seniors are dying in hospice than they did a decade ago, which is a conscious choice, and it's a more comfortable place to end your life. But it often follows a prolonged and sometimes unnecessary stay in the intensive care unit where they're aggressively treated. And so, you know, let's be very clear and let's write advanced directives and let's make our wishes known and understand that medical care is fantastic, but its capacity is limited to extend life indefinitely. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Stay with us because we've got a second hour coming up. We look forward to taking your questions. 888-302-3684 for Intelligent Medicine.